The E-12 Education Budget Division will come to order. And we have the first bill that we have on the schedule is Senator Therese Ray's Senate File 2670. And I believe there is an amendment, or two amendments, actually, I think. But Senator Therese Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, I do have the A3 amendment to kind of, we didn't change a lot, but it's kind of rewording and making sure that the bill is in the shape that I need to have it in order to present it.
Okay, and members, we just recessed this morning, so we have a quorum. So Senator Therese Ray moves the A3 amendment. And I believe that has been handed out. Everybody have it? Okay. On the amendment, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same sign, motion is adopted. Senator Therese Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I believe we have now the amendment that you had, or do you want to do that later?
No. You,
later.
Go ahead.
With this.
This is your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, members. Thank you for the opportunity to present Senate File 2670. This is an issue that we have been talking a lot about in the last few days, and it's related to special needs and how the state actually pays for it. And the intent here is that with this bill, we are going to streamline the process through which school districts actually obtain this funding. I want to make sure that members know that you probably know this quite well, but probably I should just say I should remind you that the funding we're talking about here is funding that belongs to the schools, is from the districts and federal. So there is this is our money, the money that belongs to our schools and our families. Mr. Chair and members, I have this is a simple bill that addresses a very complex subject, and that is the process through which our schools get reimbursed from the federal government for the services they are providing to our special education students. Current federal law provides that school districts may seek reimbursement for qualified expenses from the Federal Medical Assistance Program after obtaining the proper consent from families. And this bill will do two things. The first one is it will allow all school districts to be more effectively, to collect this information more effectively for federal reimbursement and for special education services cost by streamlining the necessary consent on the program enrollment forms. So what this means is paperwork. They will be we're simplifying the paperwork that they have to do today. It eliminates the need for the school districts to obtain and store costly documentation of third-party insured denials or for coverage for students eligible for MA, which is a reimbursable special education service. So the bill will direct the Commissioner of Human Services to include in the MA and the Minnesota Care Enrollment Form an authorization for consent to each provider of medical services to the parent's child or children to release to the Commissioner of Human Services medical or other information in the possession of the provider necessary for the provider to be reimbursed by Minnesota Care or medical assistance. The change on the form will be phased in as a new form, which will be printed. This replaces a system where the school district seeks parental consent for record sharing between and among agencies. And we have worked with both the Minnesota Department of Human Services and DHS on this process. And, Mr. Chair, you probably know, and other members who have been here before, that this is a process that has been pursued in the past, and it requires a tremendous amount of work. So This is briefly an explanation of what the bill is, but I have Ms. Kay Dahl and Janet Lowy. No, you're here. Yeah. Thanks. That will respond to questions and give you more explanation about this bill.
Okay. Ms. Gilbert?
If you could pull the microphone.
I'm Mary Gilbert from the St. Paul Public Schools, and this issue actually came up as a constituent issue with Representative Greiland, and she asked us to provide some support because we've been doing some billing, and it's really pretty brief. One is right now school districts have to bill a private insurance company before they can bill MA until you can document that you don't get paid. And virtually every contract in Minnesota says that they don't pay for education-related services. In fact, it's the first exclusion on my personal policy. Even the state employee contract doesn't do it. So this just says that the department needs to get permission like other states have gotten, that they don't have to go through the paperwork of billing the third party prior to billing MA for the service. So it just gets rid of a lot of paperwork. And I think the department had asked for that information. Asked permission to do that years ago and never heard back from CMS, and I believe they're in the process of doing it again, partially because of these discussions. And then the second is to just streamline the consent. Right now, before a school district bills MA, we notify the parent that they have the right to withdraw consent, to see the records, to look at the paperwork at any time, and that at any time they can withdraw consent for the billing and that it doesn't affect their education services in any way, shape, or form. And that language on the first section just kind of clarifies that we do that initially, which we do under current law, and we do it annually. So parents have lots of opportunities if they don't want to do this to withdraw from consent. And frankly, we provide it, you know, with in multiple languages. We probably give parents more information than probably what happens at a lot of county social service offices because they're going through all the pieces of the consent. Then that's basically it in a nutshell.
Any questions from the members? Anyone that wants to add comment? Not Senator Therese Ray.
Mr. Chairman.
I believe we have adopted the amendment. And so.
Thank you, okay. Mr. Chairman.
There is another amendment, I believe, that Senator Michelle has.
Mr. Chair, I have the A4. And would ask that it be distributed. And as I understand it, Mr. Chair, this is language that Senator Perry has worked on. I don't know if you want to have him approach the table, Mr. Chair, or explain it in some way.
Senator Michelle, I believe also the state academies are here too, I see. And so maybe we could have both of them join.
Please.
Senator Therese Ray up there.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Nauman.
One technical piece that's a little bit more housekeeping in nature. I was unaware of the delete all amendment, so this amendment is drawn to the base bill, the first engrossment. So we'll have to address that at some point, but that's a technical issue for us. Just wanted members to be aware that it goes to the base bill.
Okay. Senator Perry or...
Mr. Chair, I think I'll let Linda Mitchell, who's here from the academies, explain this. She's much more versed on this than I am at this point. So.
Okay. Welcome. If you give your name for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. And guess what? I'll hold on to it. I am Linda Mitchell. I'm the superintendent from the State Academies in Faribault, Minnesota. That is the school for the deaf and the school for the blind. We are a state agency. We serve children from birth to age 21, provide pre-K-12 education for children who are deaf and children who are blind throughout the state of Minnesota. The language that we are bringing forward and requesting to make part of your bill has to do with a parent option for students to access the state academies. At the present time, access occurs through the school district of residence of the child and is kind of a three-legged school with the school district, the academy staff and the families or parents of the child as part of that IEP team. We currently must be invited by the school district in order for families to access the academy's services. And having said that, we do get phone calls from families that say, where do we have to live in Minnesota in order for our children to be able to attend? And there are a variety of reasons that that might be true. What this option does is provides the families an opportunity to apply to the academies. The academy's staff looks at the application. If the child meets disability criteria, we then would agree and contact the school district. We are not trying to go around school districts. We still work very closely with them, nor are we changing the options that are already in statute. This is just an additional way. And if the parents apply, we agree that it would be an appropriate placement. We set up a 60 to 90 calendar day trial placement. And during that trial placement, we would then have another IEP meeting and determine whether or not it was an appropriate placement. Then that placement would continue. If we determined that it was not appropriate, at that time the child would return to the school district of residence. Part of the reason that we need this acknowledged in language is that if a school district says, we agree that the parents and the academies are the experts, if they would like a trial placement, fine. We have our own program. We don't think that the academies is the right place. They don't then stay on the hook for the due process piece of education. So if this option were to occur, the academies would assume the due process legalities. So then that way, because I certainly understand if a school district, I said no, but, oh, by the way, if this doesn't work out, you're still responsible. That doesn't make sense. We also want to add that we have worked very closely with MACE, with the Special Ed Directors Association in the state, as well as the Department of Education to put this language together. So,
thank you, Ms. Mitchell. members, I'm... think that the suggestion might be that we would obviously get the information on this amendment, but I think the proper, because I with the fiscal note and everything, I think the intent was that Senator Esrae, your bill would go to the floor, not end up in finance. So what I'm suggesting is that the amendment would be laid on the table for consideration in the omnibus education bill, and then we could send Senator Therese Ray's bill to the floor. So,
thank
Senator
you,
Hand, I mean to full finance, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I just wanted to ask a question on the A4 amendment, lines 1.34 down to the end of the page, I guess, a couple of words on the second page, where it says that if the IEP team and the parent don't agree, then the placement reverts to the IEP that preceded the one that has been worked out with the institute. Why wouldn't that go into then the mediation process? That isn't that typically what happens if the IEP and the parent don't agree, then they start down a path of mediation?
And Ms. Mitchell?
Yes. This is a little bit, if the academy's team, And I can only tell you historically how this has been as a state agency. We are a resource to all of the school districts in the state of Minnesota. Currently, if a child attends the academy and the parents and the academy and the district don't agree on the placement, it does go to due process. All this is saying is that in this particular case, it still goes back to that school district of residence that is the lead on that process.
Okay, are there any other questions? And I believe Senator Michelle made the motion, but Senator Hand, moves that. Is the anybody here? from the department that would want to comment or not? Obviously, you've been working with the department on that, Ms. Michelle Mitchell. I'm sorry.
Mr. Chair, I'll just mention that we have a fiscal note that was prepared for the House file. We didn't have a chance, due to the late introduction of the original bill, to have it fiscal noted. So the Department of Education has done a calculation that, and the academies as well, the cost is driven by increased pupil counts in the academies.
Okay. All right. Senator Hand moves that the A4 amendment be laid on the table for possible inclusion in the omnibus education bill. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted. Okay, Senator Therese Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If you don't have any more questions, I would like to move the bill. And I think it. I would like to recommend that this bill be Senate File 2670 be recommended to pass and sent to the floor.
It will have to go to the Committee on Finance. So Senator Therese Ray moves that Senate File 2670 as amended be recommended to be passed and sent to the Committee on Finance.
I'm confused. I thought we were laying the financial amendment on the table so that her bill would go to the floor.
Okay. The previous amendment was laid on the table, but that was because there was a fiscal cost in it, so we need to include, you know, that is the proper proper process or roadmap would be that it has to go to finance because we're in the budget division.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Wieger.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Senator Therese Ray, do you know if it's the intent of Representative Greiling, who I believe is the author in the other body, is she pursuing this as just one bill as well?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Wieger, yes. Yeah, we're working parallel with the House, so we're doing the same thing in the House.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. On Senator Therese Ray's motion, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Therese Ray. We have Senator St. John is here. Welcome, Senator Senjum, and Senate File 2793.
Thank you, Mr. President, members. Pardon me, Mr. President, Mr. Chair, and members. Senate File 2793 deals with a request from Hayfield High School Independent School District 203. Coincidentally. My old high school, and they're requesting, Mr. Chair and members, a movement, if you will, of $75,000 from their operating capital fund into their general fund. It's in anticipation of some cash flow problems next year. This would greatly help if we could do this. Their current balance in their capital operating fund is $252,000. I have a note here. They've cut $1,000,002 since 2003 and anticipating another $218,000 cut next year. So a school of approximately 790 students serving well. Mr. Evian's a great superintendent. This would help him enormously if we could do this.
Senator Hand.
Chairman, and maybe this is a question for Mr. Nauman. As I'm reading through the note here, they have a plan to restore that fund next year. In the bill, it says may permanently transfer. Is that the appropriate language to have in this kind of a circumstance if they intend to restore that funding next year?
Mr. Nauman.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hand, a fund transfer of this type is considered a permanent transfer. I guess I haven't gotten that far in the notes, so I'm not sure. The language here is consistent with one potential addition with how we've handled fund transfers of this type in the past.
I think, Senator Hand, if there was a handout, I believe, that Senator Senjum had, and I saw that, too, on that third paragraph, and I'm not sure that's correct because we usually don't ask districts to repay fund transfers that are made, and otherwise it would be more like a loan than a transfer.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Hand, I'm just looking through this right now. The way these things work in school finance accounting, a school district is free to take general fund operating money and move it into operating capital at their discretion without needing legislation for it. It's going the opposite direction that they need authority. So the school district may indeed be intending to do that, but as far as our accounting purposes, we need to show it as permanent. So that's, I think it's useful to see this. We don't often see this kind of suggestion that they're going to actually put it back.
Members, just to, there were, and I can't even remember right now, but there were several other fund transfers, some we heard, and then I believe there were some that came in late that we did not hear. And I'm suggesting that on those that came in somewhat late, that we probably would pick those up as well. And I don't have a list of them. I think there's maybe about.
Mr. Chair, my recollection is I'm recalling two. I believe that there's one from Senator Betzold for Anoka Hennepin for $1 million as a debt transfer. And that Senator Murphy had one from Kenny Wanamingo. And then I believe Senator Fredrickson had the third.
Okay. So that we would take a look at those, and I know this is kind of our last meeting, but at least they would be for consideration when take a look at the overall package. So, all right, Senator Hand.
Mr. Chair, I would then move this bill to what lay on the table for possible inclusion in the finance bill.
Senator Hand moves that Senate File 2793 be recommended to be passed and laid on the table for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Education Bill. Any discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same sign. The motion is adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Senator, appreciate it very much.
You're next.
Next we have, and Senator Bonhoeff, I believe, is not here, but Senator Jen Olson, you're going to take Senate File 2521.
Have my hearing assist, so I'm not hearing very well. You see, you have two amendments.
Thank you.
Senator Olson. Senator Olson, there is an author's amendment.
Yes, the A2 amendment.
A2 amendment.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Olson offers the A2 amendment. Senator Rummel?
I thought you needed somebody to second.
Okay.
You don't.
Senator Olson moves the A2 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same sign. Motion. Hey, Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Senate File 2521 relates to the authorized levy for leasing building or land that applies to the TIES organization, which is like an EXU essentially for a lot of the metropolitan districts, and is predominantly serving their information services, but also providing conference facilities and a variety of other things. Fortunately, Bill Griffith from the TIES is here to explain what this request is in terms of changing and expanding the use of their levy, not to be solely for the purchase of the building, but to be able to maintain and upgrade that facility, which is being widely used. So before I muddle it up any further, I'm going to turn it over to him.
Thank you, Senator Olson. And if you could give your name for the record,
certainly.
Please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Bill Griffith. I'm here on behalf of TIES. And in 2002, the legislature granted TIES lease levy authority. Actually, their member districts pay for the building. And it's owned, as the Senator said, by 39 school districts around the state, initially concentrated here in the metropolitan area, but they have member districts all over the state of Minnesota. And what they did is they retired the debt. They're still in that process, but they will retire the debt on the building shortly. And because of that rapid pay down of the mortgage on the building, they have deferred some pretty significant maintenance. If you've been to the building, and many of you have probably because of the it's really become kind of an education center, you know that it runs hot and cold. That's one of the issues, and at the wrong times of the year. And so one of the big projects they'll undertake is a rebuild of their HVAC system and many energy improvements. Also, the elevators need to be brought up to code. The sidewalks, the parking lot, there's a lot of work to be done. And so it is most beneficial for the school districts who are member districts and own the building to continue this lease levy authority and clarify that it can be used for building renovations. And so that's really essentially what the bill does. And then within the amendment are some limitations. We have a fiscal note that showed because it essentially showed all the capacity of the districts. It showed a very high number. And so this amendment really just kind of hones in on the existing payments that has been made on the mortgage and really transfers that and continues it now for the renovations. And so you'll see a limitation of $630,000 per year, which is consistent with the current lease levy at the school districts. And then also, I believe there is a term of years, yes, 2011 through 2021. And so with that, there would be no impact on the school districts because it's a continuation of their existing lease levy.
When I was going through the information, there were a couple questions that came to my mind, and one was, I believe the building was purchased in 2000.
I think it was 2001. 2000, correct.
2000. And I think the purchase price was something like a little over $4 million.
That's correct.
Was the building in disrepair at that time? I mean, I guess the question I had was it a good purchase?
Yeah, Senators, Mr. Chairman, Senators, yes, it was a good purchase, although at the time, TIES undertook a full study of what had to be done to bring the building up. And essentially, it was usable from the start, and they've actually done quite a bit of work over the years. It was a good purchase for a couple reasons. It accommodated their needs, but it's also increased in value to $13 million. And so that $4 million acquisition by the school districts has significantly increased in value. But if we don't do these renovations, we could see that value fall. And so the understanding of the board and the member district is it was a good purchase. It still is a good purchase because it's increased in value. But now these are necessary renovations to maintain and improve the value going forward.
Do you there was kind of a brief description on things that needed to be done. Is there kind of a more expanded list of costs and things?
Yes, there is, Mr. Chairman and Senators. There is an expanded list. There was a full report that went to the Board of TIES and their member districts, and so there's a very detailed schedule of improvements But that total package of improvements is about $6 million and would cover elevator, sidewalk, parking lot, exterior fencing and security, energy-efficient windows, smart light fixtures and controls, and roofing and HVAC updates. And that work would continue in a couple of different phases, and that's why we need the term of years, because not all of it would begin at once. It would be done in a couple of phases over a term of years.
Okay. Would it be possible to get a report of that?
Certainly.
Okay.
Certainly, we'd be happy to provide that.
Any other questions that members have? The mortgage? Do you know when the actual mortgage will be paid off?
I believe it will be paid off next year, and so then in 2011 we could begin the building renovations. There's a lot of contract work, bidding that needs to be done. Some of the work could actually begin this year, but I believe the mortgage will be paid in full next year.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions that members have?
Was there two amendments?
And you mentioned earlier, and I probably should know, but you said kind of statewide significance. And can you just give me a little flavor of that?
But the member districts, because this TIES organization is a joint powers organization that initially served member districts in the area, because remember back in when they started, all computer services were provided over T1 lines, and so you could only go so far. But since that is now provided over the Internet, it's allowed TIES to expand its services beyond just the metropolitan school districts. And so we've got a list. I can give you a couple for instances, but Hinckley, Finlayson, Howard Lake, Waverly, let's see. Yeah, and then a lot of districts, of course, in the area, Jordan.
Red Wing, Hastings.
Red Wing,
Hastings. It's out of the metro area.
Red Wing, Hastings, and so on. And so I don't know if that means it's of statewide significance, but certainly our reach is beyond the metropolitan area.
So basically it's, Mr. Griffith, it's the list of the districts that are on the fiscal note.
Correct.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And Mr. Chair, may I just refresh your memory that last year when Senator Bonhoeff was working hard on the shared services bill and I was working with her on that, one of the questions that I raised when we first started down that path was, do we have any information about what kind of sharing of services is going on now between school districts? And after that meeting, the folks from TIES came to visit me in my office and said, we would like to volunteer to collect that for you. And so they are the ones that were able to have access through their facilities to gather that information statewide. And I think they had about a 50% return at the first round, and I think we sent another letter out to prod and get a few more, and I think it was probably close to 75% of information that was gathered that helped us to see just how much cooperation and sharing of services is already going on within our school districts.
Senator Saltzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a question, Mr. Griffith. Are charter schools able to participate in TIES? Because obviously they don't have a lease levy. But would charter schools be able to participate in your courses? Because I know I would just talk to the Charter School Association today and try to talk about how do we, collaborate with our district schools and our charter schools. Have any participated, or would you be open to that?
Mr. Chairman, members again, Senator, yes. The answer is yes. In fact, charter schools have taken advantage of TIES services. I don't know that any are considered members because the 39 districts that own TIES are the member districts. But we have a number of districts who are not owners but who are TIES users, who use TIES services. And so, likewise, charter schools can avail themselves of TIES services.
Very good. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Nauman?
Mr. Griffith, with your permission, Mr. Chair, a couple of quick questions. As I understand the timing on this, the mortgage is a $630,000 payment, correct?
It's a $632,000 payment. So one thing that we might do, if it's acceptable, is include that number in the amendment, because that would be a continuation then of the existing authority.
Okay.
So on line 1.12, The 630 would be 632?
Yes.
Mr. Nauman?
So I'm just thinking through this a little bit. Would you continue to need the existing authority in law after that time period?
Mr. Griffin?
Mr. Chairman, members, I'm not certain of that. I would have to look into the covenants and the financing document to see if there's any if there's any continuation of that authority or any need for that continuation authority. I wouldn't like to try and answer that tonight without looking at the mortgage documents.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Griffith, one reason that this might be a relevant thing to figure out is that under current law, it's assumed that that $632,000 debt service payment on the building continues forever. The language in the law assumes that. If we could repeal it at the same time that we were adding it, we're adding levy and subtracting levy at the same time, and we end up at zero.
Okay. I think that works. I think that works. Betty Schweitzer is here, the executive director of TIES, and she can certainly come up and explain the financing, but I'm getting a sign that that will work fine, and zero out is kind of where we want to be.
Okay. If you could give your name for the record, please.
Elizabeth Schweitzer, executive director of TIES. Yes, with the last payment, we won't be purchasing any other buildings.
Okay.
Okay.
So we may want to visit a little about that.
All right. So we can maybe get some language that would do that. Any other questions that members have?
If not.
So Senator Olson, you would incorporate the change on line 1.12. Mm-hmm. The 632 and delete the 630.
And it would move that we recommend it to pass and lay it on the table for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. And I think in that interim, it would try to work on the language that you're talking about that could repeal at a given time the completion of that first, the purchase payments, and just incorporate the new.
Okay. That motion. Any other questions? Anybody have any thing that to offer? If not, all those in favor of Senator Olson's motion, say aye.
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 Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted. Thank you, Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
For. Thank you, Senator Olson, for that, and Mr. Griffith and Ms. Schweitzer. All right. There was one bill that we had this morning, Senate File 2550, that we that was Senator Kubley's bill, that laid on the table. I mean, it wasn't laid on the table, but we didn't have a quorum at the time. So if we move that, then
I'll move it.
Senator Hamm moves that. Senate File 2550.
Is relief from the penalty for settlement contract.
All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted. That's it, members. And thank you for coming down.
Yeah.
Will we be
Rummel?
Reviewing the omnibus bill?
We don't, as such, before we adjourn, we don't have a target yet, but we are expecting one right after Easter. And so what we're going to try to do, or direct staff to do, is to try to gather all the stuff that we have and put together some kind of a document that members can look at and have time to hear that and, you know, make suggestions and what have you. So
we're free and clear until after Easter.
Yep. We are free and clear until a week or so from now. So thank you. Have a good Easter. Although we'll see you on next Monday, I suppose.
I guess.
Committee is adjourned.